Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Fred Anderle. This half hour on the program, is the United States military purposely misdiagnosing injured soldiers to avoid paying possible lifetime disability and medical benefits? A 6 month investigation by my guest, journalist Joshua Kors, has uncovered multiple cases in which my guest charges that soldiers wounded in Iraq are suspiciously diagnosed as having a pre-existing personality disorder, and as a consequence are prevented from receiving benefits. A case in point, Army Specialist John Town is a resident of Findlay, Ohio. He claims he was falsely diagnosed as having a personality disorder existing prior to his injury, and as a consequence deprived of medical and disability benefits he feels he should be receiving as a result of that injury that he suffered in the Iraq War. We'll find out more. Joshua Kors is a freelance journalist. His article, How Specialist Town Lost His Benefits, appears in The Nation magazine's April 9th issue. Welcome to Open Line, Joshua Kors. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Fred.
And after we lay a little groundwork here, questions and comments at 614-292-8513. Well, Joshua, tell me about our Findlay, Ohio resident here, John Town. In October of 2004, in Ramadi, a 107-millimeter rocket struck a wall 2 feet above his head. And maybe you can tell us then what happened to him.
Sure. He was wounded in the rocket attack, which left him largely deaf. The Army rewarded his disabilities with a Purple Heart, but later, when it came time to discharge him, instead of recognizing his injuries for discharge, they decided that his wounds actually came from a pre-existing personality disorder, and discharging him through that mechanism, they were able to prevent him from ever receiving disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life.
Now, Specialist Town's wife says he has unreasonable angers. He's emotionally upset. Some of the symptoms might be congruent with post-traumatic stress disorder, but the military said, a military psychologist said, no, you had a pre-existing, prior to your injury, and maybe, I guess, prior to entering the military, personality disorder, so therefore you don't qualify for benefits.
Sure, but you know, all of that stuff is just a red herring. The real issue to look at here is his deafness. I would defy any of the listeners to understand how deafness could be the result of a psychological condition.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't fit together, and that's why all of these cases are so clear-cut. I think of the case of Richard Dykstra, for example. He had severe stomach pains coming back from Iraq. They decided those stomach pains were caused by a pre-existing personality disorder. He thought they came from a bilateral hernia he suffered in Iraq.
Mm.
Case after case that I reviewed over my 6 months of reporting on this issue showed soldiers with conditions that were so far from a personality disorder, it truly was a farce.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about what the diagnosis personality disorder means in medical terms. What is that?
Sure. Well, in one sense, it's a catch-all. It's anything that they can't figure out beforehand. They'll throw into the personality disorder category, but very strictly, it's a psychological condition so severe that one wouldn't be able to serve from the very first day. And of course, in John's case, again, the bizarreness of their accusation is highlighted because he served for several years and actually collected 12 medals for his performance before the rocket injury.
So you're suggesting it's unlikely that somebody with a severe diagnosis like a personality disorder would serve almost 7 years in uniform and serve with distinction and be honored 12 times, and then somehow it could be concluded that he had a personality disorder, which is a very serious disorder.
Oh, it's absurd. And in fact, to emphasize that point, each of these soldiers is screened twice before serving in Iraq, first when they join the Army and second before they're deployed. I have the medical records on all of these cases, and in each of them, the soldiers were deemed perfectly healthy by both of those medical screenings.
Mm-hmm.
It's only later when they come back wounded from Iraq that suddenly the pre-existing condition is discovered.
And apparently the Army's separations manual and its rule 635, 200, Chapter 513, separation because of personality disorder. Does that state then, Joshua, that the Department of Veteran Affairs doesn't have to provide medical care for anybody dismissed with a personality disorder?
That's right. And so each of these cases has to be put against the backdrop of how much money the military is saving by cheating these wounded veterans out of these lifetime of benefits. I looked at Professor Linda Bilmes' Harvard study, an excellent examination of how much this war is going to cost. And using those figures, we see that over the course of these soldiers' lifetime, they'll be saving $8 billion in disability pay and $4.5 billion in medical care. That's in relation to the 22,500 soldiers that have been discharged with personality disorder in just the last 6 years alone.
Mm-hmm. And I think
so John is by no means alone. There are 22,500 soldiers in his shoes.
Mm-hmm. And in the Army itself, I think you give the figure of more than 5,600.
Yes, 5,600, that's correct.
Well, now, you talk to sources in the Army, and you talk to certainly the psychologist, I think, Wexler, who diagnosed a specialist town. What did they say?
Well, Wexler, for example, the psychologist who diagnosed Town, and several others, he would not speak about the diagnoses. He did address one financial aspect of this. The soldiers I spoke to, all of them told me that they were directly promised by the doctors who diagnosed them that if they went along with the personality disorder discharge, they would get to keep their benefits, they would get disability, they would get medical care, and they would also get to keep their signing bonus. That's another salt in the wounds of this scandal here. Because of the personality disorder details, the fine print, these soldiers have to give back their signing bonus so that thousands of wounded veterans find out on their final day in uniform they actually owe the Army several thousand dollars.
Hmm. So in the case of Specialist Town, that turned out to be the case, didn't it?
That was the case. He owed the Army over $3,000. Wexler denied expressly stating to him that he would get these financial and medical benefits. But beyond that, he wouldn't discuss the diagnoses.
Mm-hmm. In fact, he said to you, Wexler said, the psychologist, I've never discussed benefits with my patients as that is not my area of expertise.
That's right. But, he wouldn't discuss the diagnoses of him or another soldier he treated, Chris Mosier. Chris's case, I think, highlights another sour aspect of this. When the soldiers don't get the right diagnosis, they don't get the right treatment. And in Chris's case, when he came to Dr. Wexler and the staff at Fort Carson with schizophrenic-type delusions following his trauma in Iraq, in which he saw several of his fellow soldiers burned to death in front of him, he was told he had a personality disorder and discharged after just a few days of treatment. He went back home to his Des Moines, Iowa family and put a note on the door saying that the Iraqis were after him and he had to save the family, then shot himself.
Hmm. The Joshua, I imagine in terms of speaking to you or any reporter about the diagnoses themselves, the psychologist, Mark Wexler, for example, at Fort Carson, perhaps confidentiality would prohibit that.
Well, there are strict confidential, there are strict laws about the confidentiality. But, the more I dug, the more people did come forward to speak about this issue. I spoke with several confidential sources. One who processed these papers said that all of the soldiers he worked with in these discharges seemed just fine and that it was well known within the base precisely how this scam was working. I spoke to two Army lawyers who were also involved in the discharge of personality disorder soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the commanders at his base had been pressuring the doctors to falsely diagnose. He said he knew this was happening because the commanders had come to him personally and told him they were doing it.
So there's a career pressure, clearly, on the psychologist, if this is indeed accurate and correct. The person who told you this is not willing to be named, I take it?
Oh, yes, all of these people. As one of them said to me, why would I throw away a 12-year career simply to put my name on this information? Mm-hmm. The fear factor within the Army is just tremendous. And of course, you know, that goes to the soldiers as well. I think of the case of Thomas Aiello. Thomas came to his doctors at his Army base with basic post-traumatic symptoms, nightmares, flashbacks, headaches. They diagnosed him with a personality disorder and booted him out without benefits. As he said to me, all of the other guys in his unit who were facing similar PTSD issues, they were afraid as can be to admit those medical troubles to the staff because they knew how they would be punished when they did.
I don't know if you were able to, or if this is within the purview of your article, to figure out within a given year or within the last 6 years how many people the armed forces did allow a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, and that diagnosis, of course, would allow medical and disability benefits.
Well, as I said, 5,600 soldiers in the past 6 years in the Army and across the broader armed forces, it's 22,500.
No, Joshua, I mean not those who were diagnosed as having personality disorder, but rather those who were given the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Oh.
That would allow them to get the benefits.
So. That's right. You know, there is a large number in that separate camp. But I guess this is a subset of that that group. You know, you make me think. I spoke with Frank Ochberg the other day. He is the doctor who created the condition post-traumatic stress disorder for the government.
Yeah.
And he said to me that, you know, though this scandal has gotten worse in recent years, that he said there are Army doctors that they know they can count on to come to diagnose personality disorder regardless of the condition of the soldiers. He said it was actually worse years ago before he and his committee came up with the PTSD diagnosis, because in those years, it was either they gave you the false diagnosis of personality disorder or nothing. There was no alternative. Hmm. At least now, as you mentioned, there is a select group who have been able to fight and get the PTSD diagnosis.
My guest for several more minutes here, journalist Joshua Kors. His article, How Specialist Town Lost His Benefits, appears in The Nation magazine, the issue of April 9th. If you have a question or a comment, 614-292-8513. Joshua, if indeed at this particular military base psychologists were being pressured by their superiors to come up with this personality disorder idea and diagnosis so that people wouldn't be paid benefits, and if that's happening, in fact, that pressure, you would suggest that's happening throughout the armed forces then?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I spoke with soldiers and officials from Fort Polk to Fort Carson to places all across the country, Fort Stewart, every place had this problem rampant. That's why you have such a high savings and high amount of soldiers affected. And, you know, Fred, I don't think we can discuss this without putting it in context of President Bush's visit this past week to the Veterans Hospital in Washington. When he went there and addressed the issue with the rats and the unpainted walls, he said that we were going to stand proudly in defense of the soldiers, but yet he hasn't even acknowledged this scandal. I think that's because it's much easier to get rid of a few rats and paint a few walls than recognize that there's a broad misdiagnoses system in place to hurt these veterans and prevent them from collecting the benefits they had earned.
Joshua, is anybody in government talking about this issue? Anybody in Congress saying, look, I'm outraged by this, I believe the conclusions of this article, and I want to talk about it on the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate?
Well, those who know about it are actually turning their back on it. These cases, John's and a stack of others, were presented to the Deputy Surgeon General, Gail Pollack, along with Senator Kit Bond and a few others at the end of October. And Senator Kit Bond floated the idea of having a congressional hearing, mm-hmm. but later would not respond to inquiries by the veterans group who presented those cases, or to me. And just this morning, I received a memo from Gail Pollack, now the acting Surgeon General, saying that they had reviewed, given a thorough and complete review to all the cases they were presented, including John Towns, and they had found all the diagnoses to be correct.
Mm.
But, of course, I did a little more digging, and I found out they didn't give a thorough review at all. It was yet another jab at these wounded soldiers. Their thorough review didn't involve any phone calls, as far as I understand, to any of the soldiers, including John. And what they really did to give this quote-unquote thorough review was they called up a top colonel at Fort Carson, where many of these cases come from, asked him whether he felt his own diagnoses were correct. He said they were, and then they considered it a closed issue.
So at this point, nobody in Congress is willing to take this and run with it.
No, they're allowing the doctors who are misdiagnosing to be their own oversight.
Let's go to our callers now for your comments and your questions for Joshua Kors. And Warren is on the line. Hi, Warren.
Yes, Fred. I have a little bit of experience in here. I happen to be a Medical Service Corps officer, circa Vietnam era. And a couple things come to mind here. Number one, you were just talking about congressional inquiry. Each of those people can file a letter with their congressman that will require the Army to respond within about 5 days. And it goes from Congress to the Chief of Staff of the Army and comes on down, and it's given very high priority to make sure that it's gone over individually, not as a group.
Yeah,
Number two, a doctor, you refer to a doctor as a psychologist. Now, that does not necessarily mean that he is a medical doctor. And I would hope that a medical doctor had looked at his ears and either said his ears are good, i.e. they're not, the eardrums are not destroyed, or the little bones in there are not destroyed, or they are. And if they are destroyed, then the man has truly been wronged. But to have a non-MD pass on somebody's hearing would be a absolute tragedy.
Okay, Warren, hang on the line, and Joshua, your response.
Yeah, Warren raises two very important points. First of all, the doctor at Fort Carson Hospital did treat John before and after. Before his service in Iraq, he was perfectly healthy, and I have here the medical records that show that after, his ears show significant noticeable damage.
And again, this is the medical doctor in this case.
That's right. These are from the medical doctors. So their own records contradict their own diagnoses.
I would hope that you would get a hold of this young man and have him contact his senator in the state of Ohio and file a congressional letter of inquiry with specific reference to that particular part, and believe me, it will get corrected.
Right. And
but
actually,
if he doesn't do that and goes as a group, then it's probably going to be kind of glossed over as a gross thing. Now, I have... And when I was in Vietnam, we went through a number of these congressional things. And I can assure you that they receive the utmost attention, and they're gone over very specifically, not as a group, as you mentioned with this colonel.
Okay, hang on, Warren. Hang on, Warren. Yes, Joshua, I know you have more to say here, Joshua.
Yes. Going to the congressman is exactly the first step that each of the veterans groups recommend. John did that. He approached his representative, Michael Oxley. Oxley, that resulted in a twist of events that very much typifies what actually happens when these soldiers approach their congressman. Oxley contacted the Pentagon And the Pentagon called John and gave him an ultimatum. They said, how about this? We'll forgive the money you owe us if you forget about ever trying to get your diagnosis corrected.
This was the money that he owed him from his signing bonus.
That's right.
Right.
He had to give back his signing bonus, ended up owing the Army $3,000. He didn't think that was a strong deal, and the Pentagon officials said, well, all right, I'm going to go back and tell Oxley, I tried to talk some sense into you. That's it. That's all we can do.
Is there a record of that? Is there any paper trail there?
There's certainly.
If the man is truly injured, again, I'm sitting out here, I'm listening to what you have to say, and I'm looking at it from what the experiences that I had in the Army.
Sure.
In that particular area with those particular types of inquiries. And there, when the congressman makes a thing, there is a letter comes down along with it, a packet, and it has to be signed off all down the chain of command. It's not one of those deals where somebody calls somebody up on the sly. And if there wasn't a proper paper response, then there's definitely something wrong here. And Oxley should be looked at very closely for not taking that matter seriously. And maybe he should look at talking to his senator in reference to that.
Sure. Oxley has since retired, but neither he nor anyone on his staff who handled this case would discuss the matter. The paper trail there is interesting because it did lead into partial success for John. Oxley's office eventually got a check sent to John for a few thousand dollars. That amount of money didn't match any of the amounts that either John owed the Army or that should have been given to John, and the office refused to comment on how that figure was reached. That's pretty much been the end of contact
I understand. I got to move on. Appreciate your call. We have to move on. Thanks for calling. So was this the, Joshua, then, was this the experience of all the veterans that you talked to who were injured? Did they try to go through their congressman or senator along the lines that Warren has suggested and got nowhere, or what?
Yes. Case after case, it was a failure. You do find spare cases with success. I think about William Wooldridge, for example. He came back with schizophrenic type delusions after a man in Iraq pushed a young girl in front of his truck. He ran over the young girl and later was haunted by her ghost in his Arkansas apartment. She would come back to him night after night asking why he had killed her. He was quickly, after a 30-minute viewing by an official at Fort Carson, or not at Fort, sorry, at Fort Polk, was determined to have personality disorder. Later, because he fought through his political figures, was able to get that diagnosis voided. But those victories are very few and far between. A lot of the backstage political dealing is how things really get fixed. Just like anything, it seems it's who you know, not what your case is.
Mm-hmm. So the response so far to your article and to your previous inquiries has been, well, we've made a thorough review of this, but upon your investigation, you find the review wasn't anywhere near thorough because, among other things, they didn't call the very veterans who you've dealt with.
Well, yeah, there have been two lanes of response. First of all, by email. I've been receiving 30 emails a day from soldiers saying, my God, this happened to me, or from military officials saying, wow, you really hit the nail on the head. This is happening in our base, but I didn't think the word had gotten out. Officially, though, again, we have this note from Gail Pollack, and I also received a memo from Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman saying that they had gone over the cases at Fort Carson, which was one of the key bases here. Mm-hmm. From the last 4 years, they found no wrongdoing, and also they'd reviewed John's case and a stack of others that were presented to the Surgeon General's office and found no wrongdoing there. But again, we know how they made that evaluation, by representing it to the doctors who made the first diagnosis.
If indeed all of this, your conclusions are accurate, and those of who have confidentially spoken to you from the armed forces have said, look, this is we're getting pressured over, you know, broadly here to come up with these phony diagnoses. Did anybody speculate as to how where does this policy originate?
Well, and that is what needs to have a congressional investigation. Right now, the Surgeon General's office and the other officials who were involved all the way down to the ground level are getting by with flat denials and with no comments. I think it's going to take a larger scale investigation with the public eye focusing on this issue to get them to go beyond no comment. You know, Fred, one of the other aspects we haven't touched on here is the motivation. Many people who've been dealing with this problem are kind of baffled as to why the doctors would make these diagnoses.
Yeah.
Even with the pressure upon them. They're obviously they're saving money and there's pressure, but that's only a slice of the issue. The other aspect is that the hospitals at each base are just overrun. And with a 513 personality disorder discharge, they can slip these soldiers out the door in about 5 days. That frees up a bed, which is now available for the 3 or 4 wounded soldiers who were waiting to take it. If they had done the proper thing and sent these soldiers to a medical board to be evaluated for their wounds, it would take about 6 months. And each hospital simply just doesn't have the resources to care for these soldiers for that long. There's an immediate benefit mm-hmm. in getting them out the door.
So these are the dual motivations you would suggest.
That's part of it. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a large component of aspect. You know, Frank Ochberg made another comment about this, about their motivation, which I thought was very interesting. He said, in a PR sense, there's a larger interest in diagnosing a pre-existing condition because they want to maintain the fiction that war creates courage, creates valor, when in reality, it creates post-traumatic stress disorder, flashbacks, and a lot of the traumatic symptoms that we're seeing in these cases. If the administration can claim that this isn't happening, that they're actually pre-existing, then the spotlight can be taken away from this important cost of the war.
Mm-hmm. And of course, person who you talked to from the military who's criticized this whole issue said, look, you know, if all these people, these 22,500 people indeed had personality disorders, why wasn't that spotted in their pre-examination before they were allowed to enlist, which is a valid point, I think.
Oh, it's absurd. I mean, the only argument that the military could make is that their diagnosis system is so broken that the first two diagnoses, time after time, were completely faulty. And only later, when they're wounded, did the third diagnosis get it correct. He mentioned that the person you're speaking of, the source who made that comment, noted how all of these soldiers not only had been rewarded for their performance so many times, but served for so many years fluidly. As you know, one of the fellow soldiers said about John Towne, he was one of the best in the unit until the rocket came, yeah. Made him largely deaf. And shook him up.
And we must go, Joshua, we're out of time. Joshua Kaur's article, How Specialist Towne Lost His Benefits, appears in The Nation magazine in the April 9th issue. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Fred.
The news is next on WOSU 820 AM Columbus, on the web at WOSU.org.